Mubarak Malik is head of performance for the NBA's New York Knicks and treasurer for the NBA's Strength and Conditioning Association. In this episode, we discuss how to be a part of a positive culture and develop as a coach. This is a very down-to-earth, open chat, and I hope you take away as much as I did. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the Well-Traveled Wellness Podcast. Maximum performance, minimum fuss. Critical wisdom and actionable insights from leading minds in the field of human performance around the globe. And now, here's your host, Jake George Schuster.
Welcome back to the Well-Traveled Wellness Podcast. Today we're completing our trifecta of NBA interviews after talking to Michael Lancarotti and Ben Kenyon in the last couple of weeks. Today we're speaking to Mubarak Malik, Director of Performance at the New York Knicks and Treasurer of the NBA Strength and Conditioning Coaches Association. Today we're going to talk about how to master the intangibles and let coaches know what they need to do to master the environment and create positive environments in elite sports. So I'm really excited for this one. Welcome to the show, Mubarak.
Hey, Jake. Thank you. Good morning. Excited about this, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak and have this interview with you.
It's good to have you here. So for those who do not know you, because you're not super active on social media, which is often a good thing, I think, tell the audience who you are and how you got to where you are today.
This is my fourth season with the Knicks. This is my second season as director of performance. I started out as an intern in minor league baseball with the Pittsburgh Pirates. I did that for 2 years. Worked my way up to AAA and also as an assistant with the major league team for 5 years. I worked with Athletes Performance, which is now currently being called Exos, for 2 years in their military sector and down in D.C. with some of the Department of Defense operatives there, which was very intense and a good experience for me, which led to me starting a position here with the Knicks as coordinator in 2013, and it has evolved into the director of performance here as we sit in 2016. Awesome. So it's a little backstory on me.
Yep. Well, it's briefly been 2017 now, just to remind
you. Oh, mess. Oh, sorry about that. So,
it's all good.
2017.
It's exciting times. It's 2017 now. I can't believe it either.
The days, I'll give you some a little bit of context on why I forgot was because we've been traveling for 17 games in 30 days in January. So I kind of forgot what the date was. So
that's ridiculous.
I apologize.
That's absolutely ridiculous. No apologies necessary. No apologies allowed. Briefly, I actually want to ask you about the tactical work that you did with Exos. I think that's really interesting. Just quick tangent before we get into the main stuff. What did you learn from those experiences? What did you take away? Because it's a hot topic. Jocko Willink is all over social media now. Everyone wants to know about special forces.
It was insane, Jake. And I don't have a military background. So I was just excited to work with Athletes Performance. I had no idea where I was going to be placed. I had no idea what the program was because they couldn't tell me. It was secret. It was top security information. I'm being literal here.
Yeah.
So, I spent 2 months down in Phoenix with Mark Verstegen and Nick Winkelman, discussing this program because Nick, over the years, had created a relationship with a small military installation in D.C., running like mentorships and like different types of programs for these operatives there. But they never had an opportunity to hire someone full time. So then in 2010, when the government pulled all this money into the military to start these high performance programs, the first one was in D.C. And it just so happened to be that's the one I was placed in. And I was put there. I was given all the resources that I needed from, program player, from my player monitoring, recovery, strength and power. I had everything. And what I didn't have was a framework or a system of how to get these operators to buy into it. So they put me in this military installation with no structure, no system. Here's all the resources and make it work. And it was probably the best 2 years of my life because you have guys who are and gals who are type A, they're hard to learn. They want to learn and they were broken. So they were open to receive the information and it was a great experience. It was awesome.
So you were training Russian spies is what we
It was insane. Yeah, it was insane. And I really can't get too much into it because I'll be giving out too much information.
That's cool, though. I think it's fantastic that you had that experience because there's a lot in common between any elite performers. And I mean, those guys will have, pushed themselves probably harder than any professional athlete.
And I always get asked that, what's the difference between, and there's not much of a difference because they're, as far as from skill, they're both extremely skilled at whatever that their position is just that the military guys, the operatives, the mental aptitude is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And they the durability of that is one that you cannot find in anyone who isn't trained to think and embrace pain that way.
Well, it sounds intuitive, but I've never come across humans who are more consistently excited about pushing their comfort zone than special forces operatives.
Yeah. So that was something, you know, very special to see. And it also made me understand that the human body is a lot more durable and a lot more capable of with sustaining stress than we think we can endure, you know, throughout our lifetime.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that one. So the main topic that we want to talk about today is building sustainably healthy and productive and positive programs in elite sport. Maybe let's start hearing from you what that looks like, and then what would a common NBA setup look like in comparison?
You know, I think in elite sport, you have a certain framework. And I think that in any type of environment, there has to be a vision. You know, there has to be some type of focus that has to start at the top, or otherwise you're just spinning your wheels. You know, so before I even get ahead of myself, as far as the structure and the system, there has to be a conversation, I believe, with your president, CEO, or just your general manager of what the program should be. You know, you can have one that's focused on, you know, strength and power. It could be sports science, strength and power and recovery. It could be lifestyle, nutrition, can be all these components. And that focuses on the entire person as opposed to just focusing on one component of it. And I think that, you know, your vision has to be one that is embedded into an environment that is only focus and emphasis is to improve physical, mental, and technical acuity and prowess to allow the athlete to perform on a game day. And that vision has to start at the top with the president, so that when it comes down to buy-in from everyone that's involved, it flows naturally and it's organic and it becomes a culture-based program. That's what I think should be in any elite environment. And, you know, sometimes you don't have that structure because the vision isn't driven from the top.
Hmm. That's a really, really important point. Yeah. And then I guess it sounds intuitive, so we'll keep the answer short. But what happens when that's absent?
Then you know, you have all this information, you have all these resources, you have all these tools, and it's a cluster. You know, some days you have guys who are directed to do recovery stuff, you know, soft tissue work, surveys. The next day, you know, it doesn't happen. It's not consistent. Or you have, you know, guys who are on the field or on the court, you know, doing skill technical work when they should be in the way from doing strength and power work. And it just becomes a cluster. It just becomes highly unorganized. It just becomes, you just have no control over the things that you can control because the vision isn't something that is followed, and that I think it just has to be a part of that. It has to start from the top, no matter what, so that everything flows the way it should flow.
That's interesting, and it's so obvious and intuitive when you say it, but I don't think it's something that people think of automatically.
Because here, you know, in the NBA, you know, these guys, they have 1 year of college, and they're not always put into a program where they have to get up in the morning, you know, do a survey, you know, tell you how they feel. You know, wear sleep monitors, eat breakfast the right way, lift a certain way, recover a certain way, sleep a certain way, and have all these people around them to support them in a way that they can function and reach their highest potential because they spent 1 year in school. So you have to have a net. It's almost like a safety net to catch them when they get drafted so that they know, okay, if I'm if I get drafted by this team, this is just how we function. This is just how we operate. And I think we're in the NBA, we're just starting to get that. And but it has to start from the top.
Well, it sounds blasphemous to say, I know, but I always tell people when they ask what elite sport is really like in the environment, I say, you know, in this time and in era, professional sports is not yet that professional, and I think that's important for people inside and outside to understand.
Yep. Yeah. You know, we here in New York, you know, we've been fortunate enough to get that buy-in. You know, and to get that buy-in, it takes a lot of uncomfortable conversations with people you probably don't see very often. But they expect results. And I think the more seamless that you can have your vision with their vision, that it'll keep the rest of the staff and the players more accountable, because it's not just about the performance guys. It's also about what the CEO and the president also believe that the New York Knicks should represent. So I think it's organizational based. And I've just been put in a position to be able to kind of help drive that vision here with resources that I need, and also with the support of other people. And it works and it fits here. So we haven't had too much pushback so far with the players that we have, and they are, believe it or not, have been very professional about how we operate here.
That's outstanding, and that's incredibly exciting. I think when like the last 2 years, I've begun to realize that if you made a pyramid of the most important qualities that a coach needs to make it in elite sport, to find success and longevity in a career, after a baseline level of proficiency, things like sets and reps, the science in our head, those are all, you know, quite low down. You know, they are important, yeah. But there's a whole bunch of other qualities that we need, and there's a reason why only a tiny percentage of trained strength and conditioners ever, you know, make it in elite sport and ever last once they do make it. Yeah, can I ask you to maybe name some of those intangible qualities and then dive into a few of them specifically?
Yeah, I have I have about six qualities I think, you know, that we just have to possess. And it's interesting you say about, you know, the science and the information that we have, the reading that we do, the proficiency and the competencies, the skills that we have. That's why we're here. But, you know, that's not going to make us stay here and have and really impact our environment to the highest level without these intangibles. Well, the first one that I have is relentless drive. I mean, you have to wake up almost in a psychotic mentality. And I say that, and I know it sounds ridiculous, but the first 2 years I didn't smile at work, you know, and I'm a happy person, you know, I'm very grateful. But when nothing else matters to you except that vision and what the program should be, then you compartmentalize every other thing out and you just attack, and you have to wake up differently than anyone else in your environment because you're trying to push this. You're trying to push guys to do things they don't want to do. Mm. You're trying to get staff to buy into things they don't want to buy into. Mm. And you're trying to get everyone to get on board with this initial vision at first. And you just have to be relentless. And it's every day, it's every hour, it's home, it's away. You win five, you lose five. It's the same mentality every day.
Hmm. Relentless drive. I like that one.
Every day.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the second one will be you have to be very highly organized. You know, we have all this information, and whether it's spreadsheets or if it's an athlete management system, if it's a dashboard, whatever you want to utilize, you have to be very organized because the information has to be articulated and disseminated in a way that people can understand it. So at any given moment, so, you know, whether it's 1 a.m. or 7 a.m., the information should be very accessible, and how you organize your day should be structured in a way that everyone can easily tap into what they need to tap into to be ready to play or practice. And it can't be one that's just, you know, conflicted or just not organized in a way that everyone can easily go through it. So high organizational skills is the second one. You know, third one would be effective communication. You know, you're going to have to speak with the president all the way down to your massage therapist. And those are five different conversations you're going to have. You know, as I speak to my medical staff and speak to my performance guys, we can easily get into the science, you know, we can use the words how we need to use the words, but your president and your head coach and your assistant coach do not speak the same language. So you have to understand that and be able to articulate in a way that they can understand it very concisely and efficiently and make decisions when they have to make decisions. And that's a skill that we just have to groom and learn. And it's not just, you know, frivolous conversations that you may have, but it's specific, concise, directed communication with the key stakeholders of the program to where they understand it in the most simplistic way. Mm. And then, you know, because performance is so big and it involves so many parts of the team and the environment, you have to pay attention to all the details. You know, these guys have personal things going on in their lives. They may have kids. They may have minor injuries. They may have different illnesses. We may be winning games, maybe losing games, but all these little details, you know, you have to pay attention to those and manage those. And you have to be very skilled at knowing when a red flag is a red flag, a trigger is a trigger, a trend is a trend. And these are all the finer details that you have to master. And the last one I would say, well, the last two, you know, would be accountability, which to yourself and also to the people you work with and to the players. You know, everyone doesn't want to be kept to a certain standard, but the more you can keep yourself to the standard, the more it reflects into the other players, and also it kind of trickles down. So I think accountability is huge. You're dealing with individuals, and, you know, everyone has to be kept to the certain standard. Your best player to your rookie, you know, everything has to be the same, and you have to keep that standard up every day as consistently as you can. And the last one, which we say here, is street smarts, which is pretty much cultural awareness. You know, I worked in baseball, military, and basketball, and they're all different. You know, and there are certain things within each environment, within each person that you just have to kind of grasp and know. And it's pretty much getting to know the people you're working with and also getting to know a little something about the players you're working with so that you can better bond and better show them compassion when you need to show them compassion, and just knowing your personnel to the extent that it reflects in your work.
That is an awesome list, and I see an infographic in your future.
Yep.
You know, I think, personal bias, I think maybe the most underrated one on that list that people don't think about is the ability to have different conversations with different people. That's a skill which is so obvious in other industries, but I think people don't really think about it in ours because we're so often typecast personality type-wise. I mean, the executives are obviously business guys, and oftentimes the performance staff are ex-athletes, and those guys are great at relating to the athletes, to the current athletes, but to no one else. Or they'll bring in the sports scientist who's the brainiac, you know, like research group, and can talk to the other staff, but no one else. And like that just doesn't fly in pro sport, I find.
You're 100% right, Jacob. I think effective communication is probably the biggest intangible. I mean, I'll give you an example. The reason, you know, I've developed that over time is because I was put into a meeting with our owner. And we had built this big system. You know, we spent a lot of money on these resources to kind of organize all of our data points for over 2 years. And when it was time to show them, you know, what we did, I had to speak in a way that made sense. You know, I can't talk about RPE if he doesn't even know what RPE means, or I can't talk about heart rate recovery percentages, or, you know, TREMP, all these different acronyms. I couldn't even use it because they're not used to seeing what we see. And if you don't have sports scientists, if you don't have, you know, recovery specialists or other people to kind of disseminate the information to people in a way that makes sense, you have to be the one to do that. Mm. And you have to have, you're going to have multiple conversations with everyone involved, because everyone wants to know on any given day if someone is fit or if they're injured. And that starts from the top, and you have to figure out ways to explain that and keep it short and simple, but very effective. And I think, you know, the more that we can communicate, the more that we can study and maybe work on personal development, you know, go to some courses, use opportunities to speak in public when we can, the better you'll acquire that skill. Because when you get to a position where you have to direct a program, you have to be comfortable in front of people and explain, you know, why you feel the way you feel, why this athlete is fit or not fit, and what are the ways that we can make this program better so that we can continue to evolve and grow as a pro.
Yeah, because they have to each be able to relate to you and to trust you. And the trust that comes from that effective communication. I'll tell a quick story that still obviously sticks with me. Very early on in my research project, I was in the team room and, you know, digging through Murn and Samazino's spreadsheets, going cross-eyed and trying to figure out advanced physics terms. And, you know, very much in science mode. And the number two stakeholder in New Zealand rugby walked in. He was on vacation there with his family. He was in board shorts and flip-flops. I'd never met him before. And just about made me pee my pants when he said his name to introduce himself. And he just plopped right down and said, "So are you making the team faster?" I said,
"Yeah."
"Well, I think so." And he said, "So how are you doing that?" I just about, my jaw just kind of dropped. And I guess I did okay because he gave the coach a thumbs up on his way out of the room. But I just remember that moment specifically sticking with me and being like, you have to be able to master those moments if you're going
to
make it.
You have to. And as comfortable as it is at that time, I think the more and more you get opportunities to do that, you know, the more effective you'll become. But that is probably the biggest one, is being able to, you know, articulate and disseminate information to the key stakeholders of the program that makes sense and is concise and can show that the guys are actually getting better. And I think, you know, the story you just named was one that I have firsthand experience with, and I know you were shaking in your boots, but it gets easier over time. You feel better next time you have a conversation with someone at that standard to easily communicate in a way that makes sense to him. So I think that those opportunities are very rare, but when you get them, you have to seize them.
So let's say there's a young coach or even some NBA, but knows that they want to improve at this stuff. It's hearing you talk about this list and says, okay, I want to get better at that stuff. How can they do it?
I say, you know, it starts with yourself. I think, you know, if you have some type of process in the morning of maybe just, you know, reading an article or two on personal development, you know, starting your day with maybe some type of meditation, just having some type of process to spend 10% of your day before you go to work on yourself. And I guarantee you, it will make you so much more aware of your environment that those opportunities will just come out to you and you'll just freely get into having a conversation with the coaches, you know, talking to a player about, you know, his kid. You know, you'll be around your medical staff and you'll be asking them about, you know, research papers and things of that nature. I think it starts within yourself, you know, having a process in the morning that gets you mentally engaged about what is going on around your environment and just seizing those opportunities as they come and just throwing yourself at the fire. But it has to start within yourself. I say spend 10% of your day in the morning on yourself before you go, and those opportunities will just present itself as you go because you'll be more aware of your environment.
Well, I think the list that you gave to me stood out a lot as, and I'll say this because iTunes already labeled me, as having your shit together. Right? Yeah. It sounds like just having your shit together. What you just described is getting your shit together personally, and that's intuitive. Yeah. If you do that personally, then it comes out. Right.
It just comes out because it's silent. It's just you and your thoughts, you know. And I think you'll see that, you know, there are micro opportunities within a day, whether you're an assistant or even an intern, to get better at these areas, and it won't be forced. It'll just organically happen. But get your shit together.
We should find a better term, but I like it for now. Yeah. I like it for now. What's an example of one of the qualities which you named that you've improved on in the last few years, and how specifically can you describe the process of how you improved it?
I think accountability. You know, I'm 34 years old, so I'm not that old, and you know, you have to be comfortable keeping everyone to a certain standard, and there are going to be days where people want to shortcut the process, or there are going to be days where people just have a bad day. They don't want to do what they're supposed to do. And sometimes I could be, you know, very introverted. Obviously, in this position, I have to be an extrovert. But intuitively, I'm an introverted. I'm an introverted person. And it's easy to allow someone to not hold up a certain standard because they may be having a bad day or something may be happening that you cannot control. And I think you would do better in the long run if you are able to keep that person to a certain standard no matter what and allow them to understand, you know, why you're keeping them to that standard. And I think, you know, when I first started, you know, within our best players or our more elite players, trying to hold that up, you know, every day was tough because I was so young. I was just getting in there. And I had to figure out ways to get into their mindset to keep them to that standard. And it just took time for me to feel comfortable, you know, being aggressive, keeping them up there all the time, calling them out at the right times. You know, not because everyone, you know, learns things differently. So sometimes it's better one-on-one, sometimes it's better in a group. Some guys don't want to be called out in a group. So learning how to keep guys accountable without you know, feeding into the negativity or the positivity that's surrounding the environment, and, you know, being able to proactively stay on guys consistently, whether they are having success or not succeeding. And I think over time I've improved on just that part because I had to learn ways to figure out what made them tick and how to get them to keep that the entire time throughout the year. And that was tough to learn right away.
Yeah, that's a big one. I mean, let's be honest, is holding the stars and sometimes the head cases who aren't even stars accountable is maybe one of the biggest tipping points will have in elite sport. Because if you can't do it well, you're not going to last long. And if you can do it well, they're going to want to keep you around.
Yep. So, now I have no problem doing that. But when you're starting off, you got to figure out, you know, how to do that every day. And also within your staff, you know, because if you're trying to manage a program that's based off of player monitoring, you know, wellness, recovery, nutrition, and lifestyle, those are also key staff members who also are involved in that process. So, you know, you have to get to know them, get to know what they believe in, and give them a little bit of ownership of that program so that they can drive it. And when they're not driving it the most efficient way, you know, you have to call them out and be very professional about it. But if they're a part of it, you have to figure out ways to do that. And a lot of times you're in an environment where you may be the new person, or they may have been there longer than you, and they are not used to operating a certain way. So when you create this new SOP, which I got from the military, which is your standard operating procedure, if they aren't used to operating that way, and now they are forced to operate that way, to keep them accountable can be a challenge at first unless they have some ownership within that program. And I think, you know, over the years, I've been able to kind of delegate some things to certain people, and we get along great. And the accountability part has not been an issue, and we all work very well together. But whenever you create change, you know, keeping your other members of the program accountable is also a challenge. And you have to just relegate and give ownership to people so that they feel like they're a part of it. It's also their program and not just yours.
Yeah, I'd be interested in hearing you expand a bit on that one. I've definitely had some personal experience with finding challenges in holding people accountable without coming across as a jerk.
Yeah.
I think most of us wouldn't get anywhere in sports if we weren't decent at holding the players accountable, but that is definitely a skill to develop. But holding your colleagues, especially if they're older, holding the stakeholders accountable, holding the people who hired you accountable, that's something I'm working on right now. So I'd be interested in hearing you expand a bit on how you do that.
Well, aside from, you know, obviously having that vision, so that makes it a little bit more easier for me when I have the owner, the president, GM behind me. That makes it a lot more easier. It's like I can always go to the principal's office if I need to. Mm-hmm. But we don't operate that way because we're all professionals and we're adults. I think that, you know, the best way to do this is you have a micro group of people. You know, you all like your mastermind of people and all the different components of your program. So you have, you know, your assistant development coach, your player development coach, you have myself, your director of medical, your mental skills director, and you also have like your lifestyle person, which may be director of player programs, whatever. And you have this group and you meet and you go over what the philosophy should be, you know, for the player. And, you know, once all of you get into a room, have disagreements, you know, have some very uncomfortable conversations about what the program and the vehicle should look like, what it should drive like. And once you have that meeting and you guys agree on a certain philosophy and a certain vision, a certain model, whatever you want to call it, you present it together for 5 to 8 minutes to the player. So when you have the player in the room, there's five of you presenting this philosophy and structure and framework to the player, then the player understands that it's not just me, you know, it's not just our player development coach that are bought in. It's also our lifestyle coach. It's also our mental skills coach. So when things aren't going correctly in those environments, because we presented to the player and the player has seen those key stakeholders in the room, it's easy to call each other out because we all are a part of it. And we presented to the players that this is how we operate. And it just makes it easier that way when everyone is bought into it and you meet about it every couple of weeks to make sure we're doing it the right way all the time.
And how about when it's a bit of a smaller setup or a slightly less professional setup? So I've got a friend working in the lower levels of professional rugby who has been in a job 4 or 5 months now and still hasn't been given his company car. So he's bleeding half his paycheck on Ubers, and the stakeholders are just as demanding as any stakeholder would be. Yep. But they seem to forget every week that they're not holding up some promises.
Yep.
How could he go and kind of hold that person accountable without burning any bridges? Just a fun exercise, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I'm trying to go back to my
days. I think a lot of people working in levels of professional sport and elite sport run into these types of situations all the time. Those who navigate those are the ones who stick around, you know?
Yep. I would probably say maybe, you know, get with that person and maybe plan like a trip for like a conference. You know, you get them away from the environment. You take them into an environment that is that you both can benefit from.
Mm.
Some type of conference, you know, whether it's local or wherever, just somewhere where you two can kind of see how another organization or other businesses are ran, and then it will spark the conversation of what, you know, sustainable environments are currently doing for their staff members. You know, how do you manage relationships within people, because at the end of the day, business and sport are almost, they're the same.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that will create some dialogue amongst the two of you that will allow you guys to kind of brainstorm on how to make the program better. And once that conversation comes up, then, you know, there's opportunity for increased resources, you know, more opportunities to do this. And I think, you know, it gives both of you some ownership into making the program better and not just yourself. So I would have involved that person into a continuing education conference or a course to get the both of you to kind of create some dialogue and have some evolving conversations about making the program better, because that will open the door up for some more opportunities.
That is a very smart answer. I like that. So we'll hit the kind of lightning round of final questions for you today, Mubarak. What is something that you have changed your mind on in the last year?
as far as within our program?
Anything, life.
Program-wise is probably, you know, is relegate. So give more ownership to my assistant. You know, I used to have a tight hold on everything, and, you know, I didn't want to give any responsibility, you know, to him, because at the end of the day, I felt like it was, you know, it was my role to make sure I have everything and control everything. But this year I gave him more responsibility. You know, he's running our recovery program. You know, he's doing a lot more with the data and giving him more freedom to be himself. And that's something that I've learned this year, is to allow people under you to develop, be more creative, give them more freedom, and pull the reins back when you have to pull the reins back. And that's something I've changed within myself within the last couple of years, is relegation and giving more ownership to my assistant.
Now, one human, dead or alive, you know, historical or currently kicking, who you would love to hang out with and learn from?
Probably, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King. It's because, you know, he was so aggressive and so compassionate about change, and, you know, seeing how we are now with everyone, you know, thriving at every level, when there's so many different races and so many different backgrounds, just to be able to get into his mindset of why he felt so why was that such a big deal to him, and what sparked that, and, you know, how was he able to corral so many people to believe in him, and how was that, like, the driving force of his legacy? You know, what was that like, just being the one person to sacrifice yourself to hopefully see the day that we have now, with so many different races integrating and working together and being better for each other? I would love to have a conversation with Dr. Martin Luther King if I could.
Yeah, it's a good one, because in such a negative world today, he seemed to be very positive in the way he approached everything. He was a fighter, but he wasn't a fighter in his attitude per se. He seemed positive, you know?
Yeah. So
I like that.
I would love to have a cup of coffee with him if I could. So, but in the meantime, I'll just read his books.
That's a good start. That's a good start. Yeah. Last question today, Mubarak, is what would be the three keys that any coach can try and follow to facilitate or be a positive part in a positive, productive, and healthy environment? Maybe a sentence or two, each three keys.
First key would be, you know, professional development. You know, continuously seek out colleagues, organizations across the world on what they're doing to sustain elite sport, and also speak to different strength coaches that you can at lower levels, because you also want to know what it is that they struggle with. I just think the more that you can professionally develop yourself, you have to continue to do that, because the role is evolving. Mm. And with the sports science evolution, you have to be able to look at data. So, you know, the more and more as you can speak to other teams, and more as you can learn from both the lower level strength coaches to your high level performance managers, continue to do that. So professional development and education is key. Second would be, you know, personal development. You know, read books, continuously read books that are just about, you know, mindset, mm-hmm. you know, psychological aspects of working with elite people. And just read books about yourself. You know, continuously look for ways to develop as a person. I think will have a big impact. And the last thing is, don't be afraid to be uncomfortable. You know, just do the things you don't like to do more often, because over time it grows. And, you know, I think that the more and more you can do things you don't like to do, whether it's spreadsheets, speaking in public, the more and more it becomes easier, and the more and more you'll be able to evolve into the performance manager you essentially want to be as you get older. You know, so those three: professional development, personal development, and be comfortable doing the things that make you uncomfortable.
Now, I think every podcast which has ever happened anywhere says, we'd love to have you back sometime. I will ask the audience once
just publish what their favorite quality that you mentioned today is, and then we'll come back and have you on again to talk about how to develop specifically that one. So,
oh, perfect.
I was saying, Mubarak Malik, Director of Performance of the New York Knicks, thank you so much for your time today.
Jake, thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you leave a review of this podcast on iTunes, you'll get a free coaching session with me. Check back soon for more exciting content. See you soon.
To learn more about how you can achieve maximum performance with minimum fuss, sign up to our free newsletter at welltraveledwellness.com. You'll get actionable insights from real people on how they manage their days to lead ultra-healthy and productive lifestyles. Sign up today at welltraveledwellness.com.